So what's on the docket?
What's on the docket? Yeah, we got a lot to talk about, Greg. We have a lot to talk about. What would you like to talk about first?
Let's talk about your research.
Yes. So, folks, this is going to be the beginning of a hopefully weekly segment where we talk about summer research at Rollins. A lot of students on this campus are here for many reasons, and one of those is summer research, where they explore many different themes, concepts, thesis work. We have physics going on, a little bit of theater, this and that. So we're going to hopefully get students to come in, talk about their research. We also have student employees in the area doing internships at not only at the college, but other very interesting and fun places. So we definitely want to keep this going. But first, we're going to be talking about me because we're narcissistic.
What other reason is there?
No, so my research I'm working on is with Dr. Donald Davison in the political science department. We actually started this in the spring where we are looking at, in the broad sense, anti-immigration legislation and Hispanic voting behavior. So what really sparked this up was the Arizona's show your papers law that the police, back a few years ago, they tried to get passed where the police could come and pretty much racially profile a car or people, you know, for, you know, looking Hispanic really is the only measure they could use to ask them to see their papers, their green card, their immigrant papers, to make sure that they were a legal resident in the United States. And what we took from that was we wanted to analyze certain demographic and socioeconomic factors to see links that may be pertinent over the last 10 years, things that may correlate as to why or how certain types of voting behaviors have occurred. Why do people vote for certain this type of legislation? Some of those things include trying to see socioeconomic class. So do poor, middle, or upper class, which one maybe subscribes to the belief that they're taking our jobs, you know? Or do certain, if Caucasians live in close proximity or in more diverse communities, so heterogeneous versus homogeneous communities, are they more or less likely to vote for anti-immigration legislation? Is there an empathy factor or is there a fear factor? So there's a lot. So we're looking at a lot of different things, and we've started in the spring, and now we kind of come to a tail end now, where we've chosen for the most part the six states we want to study: Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, Texas, Florida, and North Carolina. Texas and Florida being the last two states we're going to get data for because they are very lugubrious, very big. So right now we've gotten data for the first three states, and we've just begun our data analysis, and we have some really interesting findings.
And what are some of those findings?
Yes, little teaser there. So far it's been a lot of basic correlations, just because we've actually just done this on Friday. So things like we've seen urban populations. We've been doing a lot of urban and a little bit of urban and median income populations, and we see that, at least preliminarily, there's a relation between, for instance, the more heterogeneous, or well, as the data suggests, the more heterogeneous population is, so the more diverse a population is, the more likely Caucasians are actually going to vote for anti-immigration, which is a very interesting find, because you would think, at least in the beginning, that, oh, at least for me, oh, they're living with immigrant populations, illegal populations, they may be more empathetic to the factor, you know, and understand their plight. It actually becomes the opposite, where they see firsthand them potentially taking their jobs, quote unquote, or really they people who are more removed from the border. California is a great example where Northern California, it's more homogeneous. It's more all-white communities. They actually are for, not for illegal immigration, but you know, they are more understanding of that and don't vote for anti-illegal immigration measures. And a lot of that people will say is because they're not, it's not so close to their face. They're not right next to the border. They're not, you know, seeing it very firsthand. It's not, I guess, affecting them in the same way. So that's some of the beginning stuff we found, and we hope that today we're going to do more analysis, and hopefully we'll have more interesting information to look at, and it's very fun. It's been really interesting so far, and I know that maybe for some people it's like, why would you want to do this? But for me, it's I'm having a great blast.
For the folks at home, what's the final product of all this research at this point?
So the final product is... a big old thesis. And really, it started off as just some regular research. Dr. Davidson wanted to very much look at this, and he wanted to know if I was interested and kind of wanted me to ask around. I said, well, I'm interested. I would love to do this. And he brought it back to me in the spring. And originally, this was just a research project, something he was working on. And then by about March, I got a funny little email from the head of the honors program, Dr. Musgrave, being like, hey, so letting you guys know, you got to think of maybe a thesis and get your proposal ready by May. And I was like, oh, snap. I need a thesis, don't I? Wow. So I went and I talked to Dr. Davidson and I asked him if it was okay if I made this my thesis. And he said, yes, I would love to. So I would love to help you with that. So there are two major goals, three major goals. One of them is to actually get this done, to make this my thesis, defend it properly in the spring, and hopefully graduate from the college with an honors degree. That's the first goal. Second goal is we are hoping that if everything goes well, we take this to conference next spring, which means getting obviously a lot of this research or a lot of this information analyzed and have my thesis pretty much written by the end of the fall. So being able to go to a conference to present this information would be a very big deal, a very big honor. And then on top of that, the third and final goal is to hopefully get this research published in the Harvard Hispanic Studies Journal. That's the one we're aiming for, and would be a even more of a wonderful thing to happen. So those are our three kind of goals in sight, the first one being the most pertinent because while the other window dressings would be very sweet and very wonderful, I would like to graduate college on time.
Yes, that's a goal shared by many. And there isn't just the aspect of political science in this project. You had to sort of wiggle in some psychology as well. Is that true?
A little bit.
False?
A little bit. I'm not as originally I wanted to create a polypsychological psychopolitical thesis in the beginning.
Right.
But truth be told, both departments have so many requirements to kind of in their own fields to get an honors degree and to write a thesis in, which is completely understandable. That to kind of I spent a good 3 months trying to find a way to combine the two,
right? Because
they're both my loves, they're both my majors, political science and psychology. So I wasn't able to do it directly, but when you look at something like illegal immigration sentiment, anti-illegal immigration sentiment, there does become a psychological factor, whether it's pronounced or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to wonder, why do people feel like they're being targeted or marginalized? Why does the majority feel threatened by the minority population? And when it comes either economically or socially or through voting, what makes the majority population kind of fight back? And the best way I can describe it is there is if it was a graph, it's an ascending graph, and there's a line where the minority population starts to get big. It hits a threshold. That's when the majority population starts to somewhat rebel against. They start getting worried about. It plateaus. And then it rises up a bit, and it goes back up. And then it hits a second line. And that's when the majority population starts to suddenly not rebel again. They kind of just lets the minority population be, because it gets so big that retaliation against the minority population, you can't, because then the minority population is very soon going to be the new majority. So between those two lines, between what makes it safe, so the two outermost safe parts, we're very much looking at that inner dangerous zone, and this is kind of the view and the realm we're looking at. So a lot of psychology comes into it, whether it's inadvertent or not, kind of understanding what makes fear, what makes the majority feel threatened, and is it racial or is it economic? And so far we're finding it's not a racial thing a lot of the time, although there can be racial aspects. A lot of time it's economic. A lot of times it's when you feel threatened economically, you're going to retaliate in some manner. And a lot of it is through voting. And a lot of it is through this type of legislation we've seen.
Interesting. Yeah, and so really a lot of the project isn't necessarily going into the why from a psychological standpoint, but really more from more tangible, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I think, yes. I mean, whenever you want to do research, you want to find a tangible answer. You want to be able to explain it as much as possible in data. And especially when the field is mainly political science, they always want to find a specific survey or specific variable to contribute it to. So, for instance, when we do data analysis, we're going through Stata, which is a statistical filing programming system, and we impute correlations. We do regression models, we do models to find significance, and that's kind of our backup for what we say. So if we say, for instance, that economic factors are to play that cause, white populations, Caucasian populations, to vote for anti-immigration, they're going to ask why. Why? And a lot of that will come down to, well, we did a regression model on these two variables, percent whiting voting population with a certain proposition, and then in that same county they have a lower median income, for certain groups. So, and kind of that's the way we back it up. That's kind of the very more tangible manner. But when it comes to the storytelling, that you can somewhat kind of finesse with that psychology. And that's where you can kind of come in, that final dialogue, that final explanation, you can have somewhat finesse to it, as long as it backs up the data, of course.
Cool. And then just getting into a little bit of semantics. So you'll be graduating, if all goes well, with an honors degree and a psychology degree and a political science degree.
So the way it works is, and I just decided to do it a little bit differently. Not differently, but there are two types of degrees where you can get. You can get an honors degree, which is through the honors program at Rollins College, which I was accepted into when I first came to the school. where you take specific honors classes your freshman and sophomore year, and then in your senior year you take a senior synoptic course, like a kind of like one final Archon course in the fall, and you very much ties into the thesis that you write. Honors in the major is something that a student can get either if they're in the honors program or not in the honors program, where it is specific graduating with honors in your major. So the way I was able to work it out is if everything goes well, I'll be graduating not only with an honors degree from the honors program, but also honors in my major, because I'll be writing my thesis in my major and taking a senior seminar course in political science specifically. Both degrees are worth the same, as I've been told. So it's not, one is not more special than the other. It's just racking up the accolades, I guess.
There you go. Yeah, I did the honors in the major.
Yes, which is also wonderful. And then I'll also be graduating with my psychology degree as well, which I kind of wanted to. Another reason why I wanted to combine both my majors was I wanted to graduate triple honors.
Yeah,
I thought that would be kind of cool.
Triple crown over here.
That was what I wanted, the triple entente. But you know, it's a
triple entendre.
Yes, yes. So, but it's a little bit more difficult. Understandably so.
Right. But yeah, making it work. We, being me and you, hope that you continue that good research.
Well, we definitely hope that as well. And by me and you, yes, I definitely hope it works out. And we'll see. I think right now that we've, I feel much better knowing that we have found significant data just with Arizona, just with our first state. But it's taking longer than expected to get the data that we want. So I think that getting everything crunched and done in time is going to be key. I think that now we're fighting against time, but I think we'll do good. Dr. Davison, if you're out there, this is my shout out to you. Shout out.
And we'll check back in if there's some more interesting finds found.
Yes. If I find, trust me, folks, if I find something groundbreaking, something like that kid who realized the austerity paper, and...
Background.
there's a student, I think it was in Harvard, I can't remember the specific Ivy League school, who was doing this research on this famous austerity program paper by two political scientists, one of the great minds. It came up about 10 years ago and is the background for most of the austerity programs used in Europe and right now that's going on with Greece and whatnot. And he found a flaw in their data. And at first, his professor's like, you're joking. Like, these are like two of the most well-renowned political scientists, economic scientists, in the world. And then his professor looked at the research that he found the anomaly. He actually showed his girlfriend at the time to check and be sure, like, I'm not going crazy, right? Like, and she's like, no, I think you've found a legitimate mistake. And now they're kind of backtracking because, like, they fudged the numbers a little bit and it's all weird. And I'm just so, if any major thing happens where I'm like seismically change the face of political science, you will be the first one to know. It'll be a WPRK exclusive.
Right, but if it's not that, we won't.
If it's not,
anything.
I mean, then I'll just let
just
you
keep
guys
it to
know.
Yourself.
I'll keep it to myself. I will only save the good stuff, folks. I'm not gonna, no padding here at the Sands Per Hour. We don't pad.
Not at all.
But we support and lift.
Yes.
Just like any
yeah.
Any two people should do.
Anywho.
Anywhoozle.
Let's get to another music.
Oh, you want some more music? I think I can find some more music for you. Let me see if I can
cruise the iPod a little.
I'm gonna shuffle it. I'm just gonna shuffle and see what plays. Yes, I like it.
And that was Cuttin' Crew with I Just Died in Your Arms.
Tonight.
I don't think tonight's in the title.
I know, but I just like saying that because I want to finish the sentence.
All right. Isn't it already a sentence?
I just
it's still
died.
A complete sentence. No, maybe not the one that they utter, but...
I mean, fine, Greg. This is what happens. I bring him back in. I bring him back in, and he just stabs me in the back. Thanks a lot, Fredo.
Yeah. There's a lot of arm movement.
You like can't see, folks. The thing is, I think we should just put a camera.
Gesticulation.
There's a little shelf in here, which would be perfect for a camera. That I just feel like you need to see our communications.
There's a lot that goes on without the vocal. But that's how I knew he was doing an impression.
Because the accent was horrible, because I have a cold right now. It's the hand motions. The hand motions, folks.
It really does it. The acting. So now you talk.
I said yes. So now we can talk about some sports.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that first.
Or not. We can. it's half your show, Greg.
Let's save that for the last segment.
Fine. What do you want?
We'll end it
on
sports.
Then, Greg?
We're talking about my trip.
Oh yeah, it's definitely your trip. Sorry, we talked all about me. No, yes. So folks, as you may have heard many a time, Greg was out. Greg was out for 2 weeks, and people were demanding blood in the streets. They were wondering, why has this glorious voice of reason left us? And I was like, whoa, folks, I'm sorry. I know that's such a high praise for myself, but I haven't gone anywhere. And they were like, no, we meant Greg. So, Greg, maybe explain a little bit about your trip and explain why you were gone for so long.
Okay, well, I was gone for 2 weeks. I was in the Dominican Republic on a trip with Rollins, spearheaded by Dr. Bernal of the chemistry department and attended by 10 students, 2 staff, myself, and someone from community engagement. And we were there on mostly a service project, goal-oriented trip. And in the past, Dr. Bernal has taken, I believe, close to 17 years of students consecutively in summers to the island nation of his birth to work on different projects that have ranged from construction to water purification, in which we had built this sort of two-bucket mechanism in which water that's chlorinated in the top part of the bucket can be purified and run through a filter to the bottom, where it can be emptied via a spigot and consumed safely. So that was part of a project in the past that I had actually participated in on 2 other occasions. This was my third trip to the island, and this time it wasn't hygienic-based. It was helping to beautify a playground that's located at a sort of free daycare lunch program for young kids, mostly 4 and 5 years old. And this was run by Caritas, which is the charitable arm of the Catholic Church, who runs these centers for these kids. And they, like I said, are able to get a free meal and also are taught different things. They have, from what we saw, dancing classes and just other volunteers coming in from the community and sharing a little bit of what their expertise is to the kids. So it almost is a school-like environment, and they're also able to run around and play. And so they had built a fairly ingenious structure from discarded pallets that...
Pallets?
Like, for moving materials.
Okay.
You know?
Because I was thinking, like, taste. Like, the,
yes.
Imagine it, like, you got, like, human pallets.
Right.
That's built on taste. It's a word.
It's a chocolate factory.
It's a chocolate. It's based on dreams.
Right. So the pellets built the sides of the structure. It had two levels, as it were, and was also built or solidified by some 2x4s. And so what we did was painted these pallets each different colors, and a lot of what was special about the trip was being able to hang out with all these kids the entire time that we were working. And of course, I'm not fluent in the Spanish.
Really?
Really, really. But it was fun for all of us to learn from the kids and have them teach us. You know, it wasn't this situation where we're just coming in and stomping around and, you know, doing something for them. It was a lot
We're not the CIA. They're not Guatemala. This isn't the 1950s.
Right. And so, really, I mean, as much learning went on the other way in terms of them speaking Spanish to us and us saying, well, what is that word? And having them teach us exactly what they mean. And so they also had fun choosing which one of the girls was their mom and, you know, aww, hanging around them and greeting them with hugs every day. And there were a couple kids who would be following me around who I'd hang out with.
So that leads to two questions. One, how many children were you father to? And two, did you take slash adopt any of these bundles of joy when you left?
There was no fathering nor adopting on this darn, on this part. This
well, I just want to say for our viewing audience, you would be a wonderful father.
Oh, thank you.
To all the little bundles of joy.
But you know, lots of fun having these kids run around, and we stayed at a seminary, which
ooh, fun,
was very serene, was on top of a hill.
So seminary, for those who don't know, is like a big church?
It's a sort of a school for priests. Okay. School didn't seem like it was in session at the time, and they had these open rooms for us to stay. But that's basically where it's sort of a universal word, where it's not only a training area for priests, but also for pastors and ministers of Protestant, not religions, but denominations.
And this is on a hill.
Yes.
So explain how that was, especially because Florida is very flat.
It is flat.
So altitude is probably something that a lot of people had to get used to, right?
Yeah, a little bit, at least in, sometimes we would walk up the hill for exercise, something you can't do around here, and the bus had to turn off its air conditioning to get up the hill with all of us on it. This was like a new bus, we're not talking about some sort of old-timey
bus where it's like, if we want to get up this hill, we have to close all the windows.
Put our feet to the ground.
Actually, you got to run along the side of it and push it up.
Right, now. And so it was pretty steep, and part of what was cool about that is that it was sort of an isolated area. Like, it was gated around at the base of the hill, and even one of the days, there were some younger kids from the area who were able to hang out at the place, and they were playing volleyball, and I figured I should join in the games, and so I said, necesito uno más, and they accepted me into
the coven,
the volleyball game. Aww. And that was good fun without necessarily many words exchanged. You know, the universal nature of sport, you know, universal language, like music.
I mean, if
sport, you just
do it, as Nike says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was another aspect of just being able to jump into sort of a community atmosphere without really having much culturally in common, you could say. And at this place, it was 13 people living together, us who were at Rollins.
Really?
From Rollins. Yeah. So, you know, if you've ever spent 2 weeks with the same 13 people 90% of the time,
you want to kill them.
Not necessarily.
No.
You could just see how reality shows get started based on that premise.
So were there like drama? Did you steal somebody's girlfriend, Greg?
No.
Did you throw a lamp at the wall?
I didn't.
Did you punch any holes in walls?
No.
Finally, were the police called upon to remove and or restrain you in any way, shape, or form?
Also, no. So I guess it wasn't actually real.
This would be a really
boring
reality show.
Tropes are not present.
No, because I feel
so
like
it didn't actually happen.
So this, instead of this being on the Oxygen Network or VH1, this would probably be on PBS.
Perhaps.
Oh, well.
Probably the true story of 13 people living in a seminary in the Dominican Republic, and, yeah.
Well, you know what, folks? There'd be one viewer like me. It would be me.
It would be you. Very much like you.
I would view that.
But
lukewarm mess. Not hot mess. Lukewarm.
But it's a really interesting experience, not just going there, but going there for now the fifth and sixth week that I've been in the country. Maybe it's just me, but it takes my brain a while to let things sink in. And so, really this time, it was a lot about, like, okay, this place is existing when I'm not here, and, you know, people are here all the time. This is their life, and
your life normally is this show,
right?
And that's it. Greg,
so,
just kind of, but so to go outside,
so it's like the allegory of the radio station.
Exactly.
You know, all I hear is sounds. I don't know that there's other senses.
Folks.
The lights are off. If I even know what lights are,
it is amazing. It's amazing.
But in the past, it's not like I completely forgot about my experience there and just thought, oh, those people left as well. We were all just there for one
wild
couple of weeks.
We were there for 2 weeks of shooting this amazing reality show.
And then 10 million people just fled. You know, went back.
Well, of course, yeah.
Where they actually
and
live.
I think the wonderful thing is that when you do something like this, there is this a lasting impact. Like, of course, things don't go away. And I think that being able to go back and see the changes, I think that really cements it. I mean, going to do a service project like this in the first place is wonderful, but when you can have the opportunity to come back and you see that object permanence kind of dissipate and realize when I leave, things just don't magically disappear. They are
right.
Still going on. That must have been an amazing thing to see.
Right. And even part of that was there was a structure that I had worked on the first time I had gone to the country in 2010, which is now a church that they performed mass in, that I missed the service to go to the church in which I helped build. That was an accident.
Greg was preoccupied sleeping.
I'll be back there. And we'll go, and that will be special.
We'll go.
But
yes. I will be coming with him.
All right.
Yes.
Deal.
No, but you know what, Greg? It sounds like you had a wonderful trip. It sounds like
it was great.
You gained a lot. You made a lot of new friends.
Yeah, and a lot of the journey in something like this is done introspectively. Like, you have so much time in which there's little to do.
Very little.
And so there was a lot of good thinking done, and even just from simple reorganization, like, I need to really get my grocery list down, because I feel like Just as an aside.
I need to stop being a slacker. I'm going to need to pick up those bananas after all.
Well, like, I tend to go to the Costco and buy much more produce than I can consume within the freshness date. So, you know, I was able to just get some distance and not think like, oh, I need to go get 2 pounds of spinach that I won't be able to eat.
I'm not going to get that fourth tomato.
Right.
I think I'm going to just stick with 3 juicy ones.
Right. So,
but you know,
I mean, even simple stuff like that, and then bigger stuff like, okay, what do I want to do with the rest of my life?
And you know what? Either way, I think that's important. I think that
sure it is.
That from the minutia to the big,
yeah.
Why are we here? What am I going to do?
I
think they're all very important. And you learn the being able to learn anything about yourself, is great, and it's perfect. And I think that trips like this, as we've seen, you know, Greg explain, are really a growing process all the way. And if you can grow yourself as a person, as well as help the lives of others and the growing of others, I mean, why not? Why not? Because that's just something truly wonderful to do.
Yeah, well said. So now let's spend these last few minutes with our much-teased,
much-delayed sports
segment. So our news, if you will, with the Magic, is that even though they're not playing the Heat right now. They didn't make the playoffs, whatever.
Whatever.
But they will be getting, they'll be rewarded for their awful record.
With
the second pick in the draft, which is a pretty big deal. They've had 3 number one picks in their franchise history, choosing Shaquille O'Neal.
Yep.
They chose Chris Webber, who they traded for Penny Hardaway, and more recently Dwight Howard was a number one pick. And besides that, they've only had 2 other picks in the top 10 of the draft, and so this will be, you know, the 5th highest pick in history, or 3rd, 4th, 4th.
Fourth.
The 4th highest pick in history. So, I mean, traditionally, when you're picking in the top 5 or the expanded number that's considered a lottery pick, when you're participating in the actual ping pong ball lottery that occurred a week or so ago.
Yes.
In which the Magic's ping pong ball erupted 2nd, they will be able to choose from most likely a couple of good players who are pretty well considered the top 2 players of the draft. Nerlens Noel from Kentucky. And Ben McLemore. I really hope his last name is pronounced that way.
What? Sorry.
But he is from Kansas.
Kansas.
So two big basketball schools. McLemore, a shooting guard, and Noel, a center. Noel has a pretty sweet flat top going on in his
It. I want him to get chosen just for the flat top.
Yeah. But he was actually injured last year and had an ACL injury that he will, there's a chance that he'll miss some of his rookie season for it, but will still be chosen either number one or number two, which is very impressive. Shows how skilled people feel he is. And so,
now, Greg, I got a quick question.
Yeah.
If I, within the next 2 weeks, maybe within the next week, get a contract from the NBA, can I be chosen as a draft pick by a team?
See, this is where the wording is important. So you won't have a contract. What you'll need to do is drop out of school and hire an agent.
Agent.
Yes.
So if I hire an agent, And then I'd be like, yo, I think Amir's going to be the next LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some mad skill.
You'll be eligible. You're eligible once in your life
Can really any of us kind of...
You can declare yourself eligible for the NBA draft. Sure you can.
I officially declare myself eligible for the NBA draft 2013 season.
Okay. Well, then now you have to hire the agent, and then
the college will cover it. It's fine.
You won't be... That makes a lot of sense. You won't be able to play collegiate sports anymore. So you'll have to give up your collegiate career.
I'll have to give up my long-standing collegiate career.
Right. And so if you continue to play after you hire an agent, Dr. Davidson's wife, Dr. Joan Davidson, will have to report you to the NCAA because that is her role.
Oh.
aside from being...
Aside from being an amazing political science professor.
Right. She also is a sort of watchdog for the NCAA.
The worst luck of choosing thesis.
So,
and also, she also happens to be my advisor.
Ooh.
So
don't let her know about...
I will only ask for my PIN number to sign up for classes, and that's about it. Well, you know what, folks? Maybe not this year. But this information has inspired me. Next year, I will... officially I will declare that I will be eligible for the NBA draft, and I will hopefully be drafted by a team, maybe the Pacers if they win. Maybe the Heat if they win. Who knows?
Okay, right. He just wants to go to a winner, guys.
Guys, I just want to let you all know I'm an asset.
Right.
Or you
got the height.
I got the style.
Mean perimeter game.
I can shoot those three-pointers like Shaq.
Yeah. He did that. Question mark?
Free throws. I meant free throws. That was supposed to be a joke.
Free pointers.
That was
no. I made that word up to confuse you. Or phrase.
Okay, folks, maybe my NBA dream won't be a reality anytime soon, but nobody says we can dream. Everybody says we can dream.
Nobody says we can dream.
Que sera, sera, one in Rome.
Exactly.
But so, you know what, folks?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is it.
This is it.
And
give me that pen.
I'm quite saddened. Oh, yeah, he needs a pen. He needs to fill out some forms. I'm supposed to fill. You want me to fill them out?
No, I want you to put it on the form.
What? What do you want?
Put the pen on the.
I need to fill. I need to fill out the form first. Okay. Anyways, folks, look, this is a live show, as you can tell. Anyways, folks, I just wanted to say thank you so much. We had a wonderful show today. Next week, we'll be talking about more research. We'll be talking about life. We'll have a lot of fun. We'll have more fun times to talk about, and we're all very excited, folks, that Greg is back. I know that you missed him. I marginally missed him as well. It's very hard to do the show by yourself because you're essentially talking to yourself for an hour. So unless you're crazy, which I kind of am, it gets a little bit lonely. But Greg,
right, good little diatribe there.
Little diatribe, Greg. I just want to say I'm glad you're back in the studio. I'm glad we can have some fun again. We can talk about life and love and all things considered. And,
here on All Things Considered.
On All Things Considered.
The Sansper Hour.
Good one, Greg. So, folks, again, Amir Sadeh.
And Greg Golden signing off.
Signing off the Sansper Hour. We'll see you next week.